we're joined by none other than Chris Phillips of SEC Unfiltered, one of my favorite follows from the helmet content that he puts out to the road tour. What's up, Chris? Glad to have you on. And we lost him.
All right, we'll fill in. Yeah,
the Chris South Phillips. Carolina fans found him.
They took the Wi-Fi out. That's it.
Hey, Q.
All right, this just turned to a SEC.
There we go. He's back.
You were just joking about the cross into the city of Columbia and something may go haywire. So immediately as the intro was going, the audio just cut out and the screen. some hackers have infiltrated the stream. But Matt, I appreciate y'all having me, man. It's always a pleasure. And glad we're able to link up and do this. And excited, man. Week three of college football season is here. It's already flying by. I feel like you blink and – you know, we're kind of a quarter of the way through the regular season. So trying to get it to slow down a little bit, but we're enjoying every second, man, and excited to take in the game tomorrow between South Carolina and LSU.
Yeah, so for those that don't follow, tell them where you're at right now.
Yeah, so I'm in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm probably about 5 or 6 miles from Williams-Brice Stadium right now. I'm in the Airbnb. We've already stopped by the stadium, took a couple pictures, and checked out game day for a moment. And we'll go back out there this Friday afternoon, and obviously be – at game day and around the tailgates and Williams-Brice Stadium for kickoff tomorrow. So, yeah, we're on our SEC Unfiltered tour. We were in Charlotte last week for Tennessee NC State. We were in Gainesville week one for Florida Miami. So, guys, I've seen two blowouts. I'm really hoping for a close competitive ball game on tomorrow afternoon. If we get another blowout, I'm going to start questioning my decision-making. I got to start guessing better when it comes to the games and best games of the weekend. But, I'm in Columbia, man, and we're super stoked about it.
What are your thoughts on this game? Because the line is indicative that it's a lot closer of a matchup than I think people would assume when you hear LSU, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. South Carolina hasn't really been that great since, I guess, the Spurrier days. But LSU doesn't look great either. Garrett Nussmeier, he had a pretty bad outing for against USC. I'm down on LSU this year. I actually took the 7.5 or 8, whatever it was, at the beginning of the week with South Carolina. Do you give the Gamecocks much chance in this one?
I do. I mean, certainly, man, the game being at Williams-Brice Stadium is a huge point of emphasis first and foremost. I think that's why you see the spread. Certainly, it's a lot closer than it would have been if it dropped 3 weeks ago before the season started. I think most LSU fans, and even myself included, looked at this game and kind of just chalked it up as a W for LSU. Didn't really think much of it. Wasn't high on South Carolina coming in the season. Knew they had some pieces, guys, but just with a young quarterback and Lenora Sellers, a defense that you were just unsure of, lack of playmakers on the offensive side, at least going into the season, what we knew, I chalked this up as an LSU W. Coming in the week, I think the way LSU has looked, the way South Carolina looked against Kentucky specifically, especially that defensive front, that defensive line, doing just enough on offense. It's still very much so a work in progress. I think that's where you get the 7-point number from. I got to be honest, guys, and I guess we can jump straight in the prediction. I took LSU on the point spread. You know, earlier in the week, I had this as like a 27-20 game. I'm leaning more now towards a 30-17 LSU victory. I think LSU's been hearing about all week how the offensive line can't get a run push and they're this and that. Still one of the best offensive lines in the country. I fully expect them as well to open it up and throw the football down the field. I think that's reflected in, our good friends over at Prize Picks who are sponsoring the SEC Unfiltered Tour. They're over under for Garrett Nussmeier on passing yards for this game is 300.5. So they are expecting LSU to open it up, push the football down the field. I think that's how you attack South Carolina. And I just question, guys, does South Carolina have enough guns in the bullet offensively to keep up with LSU? Because I think LSU is going to score. So I look at it this way, guys. South Carolina, are they quite as good as a 25-point win over Kentucky? I don't think so. Are they as bad as what they showed in week one against Old Dominion? I don't think so. I think the truth lies somewhere in the middle. And I think LSU is still a really, really talented football team. Again, I think this is one, the crowd's going to be a factor, home dog. You love to take the home underdog. But I think after 60 minutes, I think people will see that LSU just top to bottom is a more talented football team, a better football team. And I think that's what they're going to show tomorrow at Williams-Brice.
Yeah, I think it's a gut check for LSU. Sorry, interject real quick. You know, you look up at halftime or right after the start of the third quarter, Nicholls State was playing LSU close. It was 23-21 before LSU eventually pulled away. So I don't know. I think this is going to be a tough road test for Brian Kelly and LSU.
It's a game they have to have, right? It's a game Brian Kelly. Yeah. I mean, LSU folks have told me this is the most important game and the biggest game of Brian Kelly's tenure in Baton Rouge at this point. And it's just, we would have never thought that were the case going into the season. But, I mean, when you lose the season opener and you've still got Ole Miss and Alabama and at Texas A&M still on the schedule down the road, they just have to have this one, right? They have to have this one. LSU's in another big spot, a grand stage, if you will. College game day is there, opportunity on national TV to go out and put together a complete performance, and LSU just hasn't always done that under Brian Kelly. So for South Carolina, it's huge. For Shane Beamer and company, you know, you guys might recall in the offseason, folks were talking about the seat warming up, or I even had people asking me, why is he not on the hot seat yet? I mean, it's going into year four. They just went 5-7. Why is he not on the hot seat? That chatter, I would say, has already subsided with the win over Kentucky, guys. You win this week, though, and the springboard it is for year four of the Shane Beamer era on track to exceed all expectations, because you've got Akron the following week. You'll more than likely, you'll definitely, we'll say, be 4-0, and then you'll have Ole Miss coming to town for another, you know, high-profile showdown, probably a night game at Williams-Brice Stadium. So, you know, if you're South Carolina and you win this one, what a springboard it can be for year four of the Beamer era and kind of getting everything back on track and having everybody in Columbia feeling really good about things. But for Brian Kelly and LSU, I mean, it's a have to have. It's not a want to have. It's not a need to have. It's a have to have for LSU.
Let's see what you kind of think about this. So LSU, it seems like the game plan is pretty simple. Just stop Lenora Sellers. He obviously likes to run. If you make him throw, it seems like that's kind of where he's struggling, right? He just, it's Rocket Sanders, almost 40 attempts in two games. So, you know, they're run heavy. Zellers, 35 attempts. Like, it just seems like as long as you can stop the run and maybe make him force passes, then this game should be pretty achievable from LSU. What do you think they have to do to kind of slow this team down? Because South Carolina, frankly, I don't think their offense is as good as what they put up last week. I think it's a two-man show right there in the names I mentioned.
No, Quentin, it certainly wasn't an offensive showcase in Lexington, and I think that's putting it lightly. And I think Carolina folks understand that, you know, that's the big question with this football team. That's the thing that has to get resolved and figure out. The defense has been incredible through 2 weeks. I mean, Dylan Stewart, Kyle Kinnard. I mean, Stewart's become basically a household name. The linebackers are playing well. Secondary's been good, led by Nicky Minwori. It's the offensive side that's got to get figured out, and they really have to find their identity. And I think their identity is going to be, to your point, I think they're going to be 65-35, maybe 70-30, run to pass. Guys, I question the wide receiver room coming into the season. I don't know that they have a true, legitimate number one SEC wide receiver, if you will, a true SEC wide receiver one. I don't know that they don't have a Kyren Lacy, right? They don't have, I don't even know if they have a CJ Daniels on the outside or a Xavion Thomas or any guys like that, or even a Mason Taylor at tight end. So they're going to run the football. If I'm LSU, I'm stacking the box. I'm making Lenora Sellers beat me through the air. It's that simple. I even saw Brian Kelly say that LSU is going to be more in a 4-3. You're going to get three true linebackers on the field. Harold Perkins is going to go to that star position. So I think they're gearing up, obviously, to stop the run. I mean, I think with South Carolina, it really is that simple. And I think if Lenora Sellers goes out there and has a career game or shows early he's locked in, you make the adjustment, but you also just tip your cap and say, you know what? The young quarterback stepped up, had the game of his life, and he beat us. But you can't go into that game, I think, guys, sitting back and kind of allowing South Carolina to dictate the tempo and dictate the cadence in that ball game. I think you've got to be the aggressor. I think you've got to put Lenora Sellers in uncomfortable positions. You know they want to run the football. Try to take that away first. It's going to be, you know, it's much easier said than done. You lose Jacoby and Guillory, so who's going to step up in the interior defensive line? But, I think the game plan is very simple. Load up the box with 8 or 9 guys. Put your corners and your safeties on an island and say, hey, Lenora Sellers, if you think you can beat us, go right ahead.
Speaking of running, let's run over to Wisconsin on the other side of Lake Michigan. Weird. Both of the quote-unquote big games are noon games. I think that's a little weird scheduling for what it is. But Alabama taking on Wisconsin. Alabama somewhere in that 16.5, depending on what sportsbook you get. Weird line. Last week, we talked about it. Matt and I did on a previous show this morning. Alabama, it's they're in a weird spot. Like, they just have – it seems like South Florida has their number. But then you look on the other side, Wisconsin. It's not the Wisconsin that we've seen over the past few years. Luke Fickell, it seems to be, is kind of struggling to get that offense rolling. Now, I know they're going from a running game to a more traditional pro-style offense with him. But what do you make of this game, A being noon, and then obviously Bama on the road trying to cover 16.5, somewhere around there?
You know, Bama's interesting, guys, because they, you know, if you watch them, for example, last week against South Florida, for three quarters, it was a dogfight, and then the fourth quarter, they looked like one of the best teams in the country, right? But it's the overall operations for Kalen DeBoer's team, the penalties, the self-inflicted wounds, it's really sloppy, and a good way to keep – I'm not going to call Wisconsin inferior, but you're 16-point favorites to keep the home dog in it. Shoot yourself in the foot. Make silly penalties. Turn the football over. All of a sudden, you get to late third, early fourth quarter, you're in a one-score game, and guess what? That team on the other side, they don't know they're supposed to lose, right? Those 18 to 22-year-old kids, jump around is going. Like, they don't know they're not supposed to be doing what they're doing, and they have confidence they can not just compete but go win. And then all of a sudden, you're in a sticky situation. Do we get to that point in this game? I don't think so, guys. I don't trust Tyler Van Dyke for Wisconsin. You mentioned the transition on the offensive side of the football, going from more your ground and pound to an air raid, which – thinking about Wisconsin and the air raid, just that doesn't make any sense to me. I think the athletes, the mismatch in this one is astronomical. I just think that, you know, Alabama's athletes are so superior to what Wisconsin will feature. I think you're going to see Bama running by them all day long. I felt a little bit better about this, guys, earlier in the week about maybe Wisconsin could, you know, this could be a one-score game going late third quarter. But the more I think about this matchup and just the mismatch when it comes to athleticism and personnel, guys, right, and this wasn't one of my bets, by the way, and I picked Alabama to win, but right now on the spread, if I'm going to go down, somebody once told me you don't get rich betting against Alabama, and I know that was Nick Saban's Alabama. This team is still loaded. I mean, they're still full of talent. I'd take Bama minus the 16. I just think the athletic mismatch is such, and Tyler Van Dyke is a guy that I can't trust him in situations like this. And also, guys, the thing we thought was going to be the quote-unquote weakness of the Bama defense, the secondary, it's been fantastic. You know, Keon Sabb at the safety spot, he's been incredible. We all know about the veteran safety you have, obviously, back this year. I get the Malachis mixed up. Malachi Starks and Malachi Moore. That's what it is. I get those two mixed up. But Malachi Moore and Keon Sabb, they've been great at the corner spot. They've got plenty of talent right in the secondary. It was just about, can those young freshmen step up? They've been really good. So I'm going to go Bama. I'm going to go Bama to win big and cover that 16.
I wonder, too, how much of this is just the overreaction of we all saw USF kind of taking care of business against Alabama, and they may just have their number.
And Bama, I think USF's athleticism is actually greater than what Wisconsin has, and I think their staff would tell you that.
Probably.
Well, I think
so.
The South Florida boys, you get those kids that don't make it to Florida, to Miami, to Florida State, and they're just head and shoulders faster, more agile than the prototypical Midwest Big Ten kid that Wisconsin's typically recruiting.
All right, let's go to the other Columbia as Boston College, kind of the darling of week zero, knocking off Florida State, taking on Mizzou. This line is dropping. It's I'm indicative of a lot of money coming in on Boston College. It's actually down to 14.5. I think it opened around 18. What do you make of Eli Drinkwitz's Tigers this year? Do you think that they're going to dominate Boston College, or do you think Castellanos and the Boston College Golden Eagles can hang around them?
I have this gut feeling, guys. I have no doubt that Mizzou is going to win the football game, but I do have this gut feeling that, you know, I loved it at 18. I think it's a two-touchdown kind of game. I think Castellanos is just good enough and just really just frustrating enough, excuse me, for that Missouri defense to give them some problems. And this is going to be the first real test, right? They've been impeccable. I mean, you cannot be better than Missouri has been defensively through the first 2 weeks. They haven't given up a single point, right? So, I love their personnel, guys. We know what they have on the offensive side with Brady Cook and Luther Burden and Theo Weiss. And, you know, they got two great running backs they picked up via the transfer portal. They're getting Brett Norfleet, their tight end, back this week. Defensively is where the questions lie. I will say this, guys, as much as we can learn from watching games against Murray State and Buffalo, I like their personnel and what we've seen thus far. And again, when you pitch two shutouts, there's a lot to like, but this will certainly be their stiffest test, guys. So I think Castellanos, you know, how much do you take away from the Florida State game? What is Florida State this season? They look pretty putrid at this point, but I do like what I've seen. I think Castellanos is a guy that, again, can keep this game interesting. He's just frustrating enough, I think, for Corey Batoon and a defensive coordinator and that defense as a whole to, you know, extend drives and make some big plays and make this game maybe closer than it should be. I think Mizzou wins, no doubt. But if you're giving me more than two touchdowns on the line, I'd probably go Boston College here, honestly. And I could be totally wrong. I know Mizzou wants to go out there and prove to everyone just how good they are. And, you know, they very well may do so. But I think that even then, they could do it in this game, be like a 37 to, I don't know, 23 kind of game, or maybe 37. I don't know. Something like that. I think it could be like one of those backdoor cover situations. So
yeah,
it would be a stay away for me from a standpoint of betting it. But if I had to, I'd probably throw a little bit on Boston College, because I think Castellanos can, again, give that defensive headaches. But Missouri's the better team. They're going to win this football game. Again, we're talking about a two-plus touchdown spread here.
What do you make of the new member Oklahoma? They seem a little down this year. You could see the talents there. Like, there's flashes of greatness, and there's no doubt about it for the Sooners. The brand itself is elite. But then Tulane, I mean, Tulane's coming off a tough home loss to Kansas State. But they're a team, man. You just can't sleep lightly in the group of five matchups with them. They know how to just play solid defense. Oklahoma, tough showing last week. This is a toss-up. I think I would like Tulane a little better if they were at home once again in New Orleans. But again, Oklahoma seems a little down this year in comparison to the other teams. Give me your thoughts on this game with Oklahoma laying 13.
Yeah, this game terrifies me. I've actually publicly played this at Tulane plus 14. Oklahoma's offense has been anemic. They've been putrid. I mean, use whatever adjective you want. And talking to folks earlier in the week, guys, in Norman, they have real concern. And it's not just one thing, right? It's Jackson Arnold. It's the offensive line. It's all of the wide receivers outside of Deion Burks. It's Seth Luttrell's play calling. It's injuries, right? So, you know, I think this is something that I don't think is going to be fixed in a single week. I question with Tulane. You played a really hard-fought competitive game against Kansas State. Can you follow that up and put together your best game or one of your best games again against SEC competition, right? That is the big question. So I like Oklahoma to win. Guys, I nearly picked Tulane in this game. I nearly went with Tulane with a straight-up upset. And then I had Oklahoma winning 21-20. And then I changed it finally. I settled in on 21-17. I'm giving them a little more credit, but I think this is a hard-fought fourth-quarter game. I like John Summerall, the coach for Tulane. He's a defensive-minded guy. I think defenses are going to rule the day again. Oklahoma's defense is fantastic. If they cover, it's solely because they're defense, guys, and they probably nearly pitched a shutout. I don't see that happening, but the defense is really good. Can Oklahoma get anything going offensively? I got to see it before I can believe it. And, guys, I love these – listen, I love Oklahoma fans. They have been great to us. They've engaged with us. They've supported our content. They are awesome. But I do find it kind of interesting that everything we said over the summer about Oklahoma, about questions on the offensive line, questions with a young quarterback, they didn't want to hear it. They didn't want to believe any of it. And it's like the humble pie has been served through the first 2 weeks. Because even against Temple – they were really bad on third down, right? And Temple was so bad, you couldn't tell anything. And then you go beat Houston 16-12, who got blasted by UNLV the week before. So a little bit of humility is set in, and if they're not careful, Tulane will make it even more so. So I think Oklahoma wins, but I got Tulane at 14. I love Tulane plus 14 in this game.
Does Oklahoma get Anderson back this week?
I do not think Nick Anderson is back, based on the people I've talked to. Now, again, that may have changed. I mean, we are talking Friday afternoon, so but I do not think he is back, no.
Looking at their schedule, Oklahoma's got to win this game. And are we going to be surprised if Tulane wins? Probably not. Maybe a little bit, but I really liked Oklahoma. Our numbers on collegefootballinsiders.com liked Oklahoma. But the more that I sit here and stare at that Houston 16-12 type game, Tulane's got, I feel like, a lot more talent than Houston had. So it's not going to surprise me.
To your point, if they lose to Tulane, I mean, you talk about it will be a straight-up gut punch, and Oklahoma will have to realize very quickly what they are this year. Because, again,
you still have Tennessee, Texas, Ole Miss, Alabama, Missouri.
Schedule's brutal.
LSU, I mean, on that schedule. I mean,
it felt blasphemous to their, like, based off their fan base, it was blasphemy to pick them to go 6-6 or 7-5 this year. Because I get it. Oklahoma's a very, very proud program, extremely proud. But again, with the personnel, the schedule, it was just honestly bad timing, guys, the fact they came into the SEC this year. Because again, if they lose to Tulane and we ain't gotten SEC play, and that Tennessee game was a game that I picked Oklahoma to win before the season. I know many others did as well, because first SEC game, Josh, they will get blasted by Rocky Top, you know? Yeah. So this is your last chance to sort of figure some things out.
Chip.
you know, yeah, right the ship, if you will. If they can't get the offense going this week and the offensive line struggles again, Tennessee's front seven is going to eat them alive.
All right, let's go to Gainesville, talk about Q's Florida Gators, who I think he has a love-hate relationship with. He's actually rooting for them to lose this game. A lot of sharp money coming in on on Florida here against Texas A&M. I wasn't very impressed with Connor Wiegman, especially in the Notre Dame game. Is A&M, I mean, I know Elko's deal is defense. Are you buying into Aggies being good in year one, and could Florida pull their outright upset at home?
This game is fascinating, guys, because it's a pair of teams I came into this season skeptical on, and both for different reasons. I mean, Texas A&M, year one of a new head coach. I like Mike Elko, but, I mean, again, it takes longer than one offseason, guys, to fix a broken culture, and Texas A&M was a broken culture. Let's just be honest. When it comes to Florida, there were a lot of things that Billy Napier needed to show us this year, right? I mean, they had been a stupid football team his first two seasons, just made mental mistakes, which ironically enough, guys, I think they're like number one in special teams efficiency or something right now. Some special team stat, which
it's
just shows
mat.
You.
It's the mat.
Yeah, it's the mat. It shows you how drunk this season already is. But I was at that game week one, guys, Florida-Miami, and certainly this team, Texas A&M, is not equivalent to Miami. But I watched Florida get drug up and down the field. I mean, they got blasted. They got blasted in every way, every phase of the game. This game, guys, feels like one of these two teams more so is going to lose it, not the other's going to win it, if that makes sense. Like, that's kind of who these two teams are right now. I am going Texas A&M in this game, and I'm going A&M to cover. I cannot get the image out of my head of what I saw in week one. I just can't trust Billy Napier and the Florida Gators right now. And I got to be honest, and Q, I'll just tell you straight up, I told my Florida buddy straight up this when I was there, and they were like, we understand. This game is in the swamp, correct? That means nothing to me. That means literally nothing.
Well, the culture's not there.
The swamp's not the swamp anymore. I was there. It was loud for about 5 minutes. And after that, it was like a morgue.
Miami shut them up real quick.
Like, bro, when you're losing the way you did to Miami, when you're losing to Arkansas, I'm sorry, but you have lost the right to tout, well, you know, the game's in the swamp. Who gives a damn? Might as well play it in a parking lot. It does not matter. It does not matter. Now, if this team comes out and gives the fans something to get behind, I think they will. But I'm just saying, until I see that, I don't factor the home crowd in with Florida anymore. I'm sorry, and I hate it because I was really hoping week one, I was like, if the swamp's going to get back to glory, this is the week. This is the game you have to win, or at minimum, be competitive. And they couldn't even do that. So I don't really trust either side. I'm fascinated how Billy Napier handles the DJ Lagway thing. It's a really difficult situation. Personally, I'd start Graham Mertz. He's your guy. He's your now. You always looked at Lagway as your future. But I think you obviously go off what you're seeing. If you get two or three drives in and the offense is stalling, I think you got to put Lagway in. I
agree.
The fan base is going to be irate if you don't put him in and try to get some sort of spark off it. It's a tough situation because, I mean, you could justify to me he should just start, but then again, you're throwing away your guy Graham Mertz, who has done so many good things for you, and I just don't – there's a reason he was your starting quarterback. He obviously has something, whether it be experience or whatever else, that DJ Lagway didn't have to start the year. So will a two-quarterback system work? We'll see. Will the play calling allow it to work? Again, it was very uninspiring in game one. And then defensively, I question Florida. The secondary, I also hate the matchup when it comes to Texas A&M's front seven against the Florida offensive line. I think the right side of the offensive line is a real liability. So whether it's Mertz or whether it's Lagway. And guys, if you inject Lagway, who's extremely talented, you've got Mike Elko, this defensive mastermind, going up against his freshman quarterback. I'll take my odds. I'll take my chances with the defensive mastermind every day of the week. So I don't think either one of these teams is going to do anything outrageous this year, but it's who I trust less. And unfortunately right now I trust the Gators less. So I'm going to go with Texas A&M. I'm going to go Texas A&M to cover in the game as well.
Chris, do you think Mike Elko is playing a little chess here? So obviously Florida refused to put out a depth chart like they did the first 2 weeks. Eugene Wilson's there. And then suddenly today Wiegman pops up on the questionable list. Mm. Do you think that's just kind of a game of chess that they're playing, or do you think he has some serious lingering things? Because a lot of Aggie people actually that I've seen on Twitter, they say he doesn't look right. And obviously they know what right is more than I do per se. But do you think there's any lingering injury there, or do you think it's just a chess match?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't think he's like 100%.
Yeah.
But I think it's also a chess match, because I can tell you this, Q, from the people I talked to last night that are tight with A&M, he's playing. He's playing. I will say this, too, the interesting dynamic of these injury reports, apparently, like, they're really cracking down on you better not tell a fib. So, you know, you know what I'm saying? So, if he's really questionable, he's really questionable. Yeah. Right. What it should tell you, though, again, is he's less than 100%, but I'd be shocked if he didn't play. Because, again, for everybody's told me he is playing, he's going to go, he's good enough to go, right? But is there something lingering? I mean, I think absolutely there is. So, I mean, that certainly is something to watch in this game. You know, you saw him against Notre Dame, did not look good, and it didn't look like he really trusted himself after the injury either in his footwork. So, I mean, that's going to be a big piece of it. But like I said, guys, even with that, I don't trust Billy Napier and the Florida Gators right now. I just don't. So I've got to see it. I've got to see it, and maybe they can make the Swamp great again this Saturday.
A loss for the greater good.
The old saying, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none.
Which, to what, by the way, to what Q just said, I almost think being at home could be a detriment to Florida, because how much of this fan base wants them to lose? And if things start going south from the first drive, the Boo Birds will be out. The Swamp could turn on Florida. Like, again, this could be a Felipe Franks hushing his own crowd situation again. Like, I went week one. People were excited, but you could feel the tension in the stadium. Even before kickoff, you could just feel the anxiety. And now, I mean, this fan base is at a breaking point to where, like, they're pulling for the Gators, but they're also like, don't tempt me with a good time. Let something bad happen on the first drive. I'm going to start calling for Billy's head. I can't wait for him to get fired. So it is this really, really interesting, fragile situation. And so I think it's going to be probably like a touchdown 10-point game. I could also see A&M running away with this thing, because Florida is just so, like, just out of it. So this is to me, guys, the most fascinating game of the day. I can't wait to watch this one after the South Carolina LSU game.
From one toxic program to another one, the Arkansas Razorbacks. Q is living out the Chad Morris era for us. I mean, from the moment we had the club dub celebration, because you beat a FCS school and then you lose to North Texas and Western Kentucky and everybody else. I mean, that was rough. But Hogs do look better. Granted, they lost to Oklahoma State on the road in a game that they had really no business losing. They shot themselves in the foot with a muff punt, pick six by Taylen Green, who played extremely well outside of that one throw. Over 400 yards passing. You look at the box score, it's like 650 yards to 380. It wasn't even close. This offense under Bobby Petrino looks really good. I do think Arkansas is going to come out hot and mad. Pittman not in very good at home. Oddly enough, plays a lot better on the road. But I do think Bobby Petrino being in that game management role is going to help with this and just maintaining momentum. What do you make of UAB? Do you think the Hogs are going to cover this big number at 23? Or do you think the Blazers are going to be able to hang with them?
Matt, I tend to think that Arkansas is going to cover. I mean, the way you bounce back from that loss last week is really, really important, obviously. It's weird. I left that game last week. You know, I was upset because I had Arkansas on the money line. And they, like you said, they choked that game away. I mean, you look at the numbers. If you'd have just showed me the stats, guys, before the game started, I'd have said Arkansas won this game by 3 touchdowns. This was a blowout. So the fact they somehow found a way to lose that game was stunning in its own right. Coming home in front of the home pit. This is their first true home game, unless this game's in Little Rock. I don't think it is. This is the first game in Fayetteville. You know, I think they'll be excited to get home. I think the offense is for real, guys. I like what I've seen from Taylen Green. Jaquindon Jackson is a monster. He runs pissed off, which you love to see. And UAB, guys, I mean, you look at them. They lost last week to La Monroe 32-6. They beat Alcorn State in week one, 41-3. But, I mean, listen, I love Diego Pavia and Vanderbilt, but they beat them 55-0. So, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in that W. I think Arkansas wins this one. I would take the Hogs on the minus 23 if I had to bet it. It's probably a stay-away game for me, but I would definitely take Arkansas minus 23. I could see that offense, guys, popping off for 50 points again. I just, you know, it's all about responding the right way. Could there be a little bit of a hangover? Maybe, but I expect Sam Pittman, Bobby Petrino, and the boys – Travis Williams, the D coordinator, get their team off the mat and be ready to go. And again, be excited to play in front of the home faithful and put on a show. And so, again, I take Arkansas, and I'll take Arkansas to cover.
Yeah. Can we get Luke Austin injected into the offense? And the kid's one of the better young tight ends, and I'm sitting on fantasy with him, and he's doing nothing for me. Somebody call up Bobby Petrino and tell him to run some tight end routes.
We have now added Tyson and Walmart to our field, so that should be
smart good. Move. That's a good smart advertising. Move.
Yeah, get that
listen,
money.
People will say whatever they want, but in today's college football, that's genius. So good on Arkansas. That's really smart.
All right, Ole Miss at Wake Forest. Ole Miss was one of those sleeper teams, I guess. Not really a sleeper team when you start preseason top 10, but I really think Lane Kiffin, if there was one year where he can win the big game and get over that hump of being terrible, especially against the spread, against top five games. I know Georgia, they'll play here in several weeks, but Ole Miss is going to Wake Forest. I don't really know much about the Demon Deacons. Maybe you guys can fill in, but I've got to believe that Ole Miss is going to continue to roll here and Jackson Dart pursues the Heisman.
Matt, Wake Forest stinks. That's all you need to know.
Yeah.
They stink. Yes. Next. And I would tell you this. I would say this. Bet Ole Miss until they don't hit. I'm taking Ole Miss on the spread until they don't hit. I took them last week minus 40 and a half. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I think they might be up 42-0 at halftime. I mean, I don't know what we're doing here. And sure enough, they covered. So, you know, Jackson Dart is playing at a historical rate. He's sort of chasing the Heisman Trophy, although he had one of the coolest quotes a couple of days ago on the Jim Rome show when he said, I've got Natty on the mind, which was a really badass quote from him. I mean, they're loaded, man. Ole Miss, top to bottom, offense, defense, everything. They're loaded. You know, they're finally playing some power four competition. I think Ole Miss, guys, if they were locked in against a group of five teams, what do you think they're going to do against a power four team? Like, I think they want to continue to prove just how good they are and ramp this thing up. And I don't think Wake Forest is going to have any sort of answer for them. So give me Ole Miss. I see you got it at 21.5. I took it 23.5. I don't know if there's a number you could put it at where I wouldn't take it, because Ole Miss at this point is naming their score. So I think they win. I think they cover. They'll win big in Winston-Salem.
Q, you got anything for Ole Miss?
I got nothing. Like he said, just take them until they don't. I mean, Lane's trying to prove something. He's always been the coach that people say, like, blows games, big games, and I think he's trying to prove that this year. They went all out with NIL this year, so it's kind of make or break, in my opinion, for him.
All right, let's go down to Austin. We've got All-Texas affair, UTSA taking on the Longhorns, coming off a big win at the Big House in Michigan. Is there a letdown spot for the Longhorns, or do you think they continue to roll?
I don't see it. I think Texas – I would take Texas to cover. I know that number's huge, but you look at UTSA, they've been abysmal to this point, man. I think that again, Texas is another one of those teams. It's on a mission. You know, you follow. I think they'll follow up the Michigan game the right way. That was a dominant performance. I think they're going to want to keep the momentum rolling. They've got one more non-conference game, and then they finally dive into SEC play when they take on Mississippi State in a couple weeks. But I would take Texas. I think Hook'em rolls in this one, even at 35.5. If I'm going one side or the other, give me the Texas Longhorns to cover.
All right, one that I know everybody is excited to talk about, Vanderbilt at Georgia State. Vanderbilt, you talked about it, Diego Pavia. He looks really good. And Vanderbilt, for once since the Jay Cutler era, may have a formidable quarterback that makes some games enjoyable here. Vandy laying it minus 10.5. You backing the doors here to go 3-0 ATS.
This was one of my public plays, guys. I am riding with Vandy minus 10. I believe in Diego Pavia, man. That dude is a legend. Did y'all hear? I think it was a week and a half ago. He compared himself to Johnny Manziel. I mean, that man
compared him swag. To Johnny Manziel. Yeah. He's a
that
man.
Johnny Manziel drips swag, man. So I'm riding with Diego Pavia. Yeah. I'm sure at some point Vanderbilt's going to come back down to earth, crashing down to earth. And, you know, maybe that's next week when they play Missouri right in Como. But I think this week, and it's a tricky spot at Georgia State. This is not Alcorn State, right? This is a interesting, but I think if Georgia State still had Sean Elliott, I might feel a little bit better for the Panthers. But, you know, there's so much change happening in Atlanta right now. And again, Vandy's hot, man. They're playing with a lot of momentum, and it starts with Diego Pavia, and I think he helps the Doors win and cover and move to 3-0. And guys, hit the over on their preseason win total just 3 weeks in. Over-under was 2.5 for Vandy.
That's crazy.
From Georgia State to Georgia, let's go to Lexington as the number one Bulldogs take on the Kentucky Wildcats. This is a weird line to me. You mean to tell me that Georgia, who beat Clemson by way more than this spread, Kentucky, who lost to South Carolina by more than this spread, something feels fishy here. Why is this such a short number? Do you not think Kirby Smart can dominate his ex-quarterback in Brock Vandegrift and the Kentucky Wildcats this weekend?
Yeah, Matt, the spread is interesting. I would stay away from it personally, but I think the reason it feels like, why is Georgia not favored by 30? You know, I think there's an overreaction to how bad Kentucky looked. Again, things are never as good as they seem. Things are never as bad as they seem. So is that who Kentucky's going to be for the entire season? Well, I mean, they better hope not, because Mark Stoops will be fired or be forced into retirement. But I don't think they're going to be that bad all year long. That being said, I mean, this is Georgia we're talking about. If they want to cover, they will. These games between Georgia and Kentucky are always really, really physical. Ground and pound. It's always a street fight. You know, listen, again, I wouldn't take the line in this. I wouldn't touch it because, again, Georgia absolutely could cover. But to your point, it's been around like that 22, 23, 23 and a half number. If it was at that, I'm probably going Kentucky because I think Georgia wins by 21 points. I get, guys, this game, this has 31 to 10 written all over it. Has 31 to 10. And Kentucky's still got really, really good defensive personnel. So if they can generate anything on offense, I think they can really speed this game up, you know, get the clock moving, tick, 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 and shorten the game, if you will, and probably help in you know, preserving, you know, or at least eliminating the possibility of a blowout loss. So Georgia's going to win the game. It's only a question about how much. But at 22, I'd probably go Kentucky, guys, because, again, it screams 31 to 10 to me.
All right, New Mexico at Auburn. Auburn just dropped. It was an abysmal game for them. Lose 21-14 to Cal. Cal's trolling now with the billboard. I don't know what to make of this Auburn team. You've got to believe that Hugh Freeze is going to bounce back and get a big win. 28 may be a lot to cover for a team that struggled on offense last week, but what do you make of Auburn this year?
Hank Brown, guys, was just announced as starting quarterback for Auburn. Give me the Tigers to cover 28. Vibes are high on the plains. Everybody's pumped up. Hank Brown is going to show Hugh Freeze why he was so foolish to stick with Peyton Thorne. He may not be great. He may not be the best, but damn it, he's better than Peyton Thorne. So give me Auburn to cover. Hank Brown shines, and Hank Brown will be your starting quarterback going in the Arkansas game.
All right, Toledo, Mississippi State. Mississippi State, just a rough game last week in Arizona State, and hats off to the Sun Devils. Cam Scatabo, just he did whatever he wanted to.
Arizona State won me money last night. Cam Scatabo, I had Arizona State on the pick'em. I had Arizona State.
I was lucky enough to get three in the hook with Texas State. Thought they could get the win outright. That line, that dropped a lot. Actually, Texas State ended up being the favorite, but yeah, Arizona State looked for real, especially against Jeff Lebby and Mississippi State. They bounce back and get this 10-point win at home, or do you think Toledo covers?
Guys, Mississippi State, I like Jeff Lebby a lot. I think they're in good hands. I think they're going to be unique offensively, and I think it's going to be good for Mississippi State football, right? You either got to be you're either more than, less than, or different than. I think Jeff Lebby can make them different than. I think he does that offensively. Defensively, the personnel, I mean, you got Coleman Hutzler, first-time defensive coordinator. Guys, they had two starters coming back this season. I mean, that just a brand-new football team. I'm going Toledo to cover. I'm going Toledo money line. I'm going Toledo money line in Starkville. Wow. This is my kind of off-the-wall pick of the weekend. I'm taking a shot here, but
Week, the action balled out. So
do not sleep on the Rockets. Do not sleep on the Rockets. I think Toledo wins this game straight up.
We got a clip.
Well, there's one that did not make the card because, quite frankly, I ran out of room, and they're a 49-point favorite. That is the Tennessee Volunteers and Nico Iamaliava taking on Kent State, who is 0-2. We don't even have to talk about it,
guys.
Right?
Tennessee's kind of like Ole Miss. I'd bet them till they don't cover. 49 sounds crazy, but they could win this game 66-0. They could win this game 56-0. Like, it very well could happen. So I wouldn't bet it, obviously, but if I had to, I'm not sitting there hoping the Golden Flashes keep this thing within 49 points. I'm just not doing it. So I'd bet on Nico. And here's the thing: Tennessee's twos, bro, they're good enough to go up and down the field on Kent State too. So yeah, I'd go Tennessee to cover, but they'll win big and set up a big time matchup next weekend in Norman.
All right. Well, that wraps it up for this SEC Unfiltered edition of College Football Insiders. Appreciate all 1,068 of you who are tuning in live right now. I appreciate y'all. And until next week, Chris, take care in Columbia. Don't get kidnapped or anything. Don't piss off Gamecock fans.
Every 4 hours.
Yeah.
Arkansas fine. East is what I call it, because I feel like y'all have taken our coaches. You've taken players. I hope Rocket Sanders runs for over 100 yards at least. That would be the first time, I think, this season. But, yeah, go Gamecocks.
Matt, Q, appreciate you guys. Always a pleasure. Let's definitely do it again soon.
All right.
Appreciate it.
We'll see you later. See you later.